TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
We will be there. Come with us.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.
A division of Bell Media.
Let's do it.
It's Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. On the official home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy wearing the old school Illegal Curve toque, I must say. It's quite sharp there, Ezzy.
Timmy had the old school Illegal Curve toque on as well.
Okay, you guys
and
are matching.
And we branched out into fitted 5950 hats.
Exactly. Those are available via our website, www.illegalcurve.com, so you can check them out there. Let's really get started with the big news of the morning. It's nice of the Winnipeg Jets to always have news breaks Saturday morning, I find. Mm-hmm. It's very convenient for us in that it always leads us directly into the big news. So let's get started. Some significant roster changes for tonight's Jets-Panthers game taking place at MTS Center's puck drop at 6 o'clock. First and foremost, the Jets' best player, Evander Kane, is out with a concussion. I mean, they didn't absolutely confirm it's a concussion, but they said kind of, sort of, maybe, looks like it probably is. It's a concussion. Evander Kane out of the lineup for tonight's Jets game with a concussion. I'm not a doctor, but I'm going to speculate that with games tonight and
you're
the
not
game,
a doctor, but you'll take a look.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to speculate that with games tonight and then Monday and Tuesday, then a week off for the All-Star break, we probably won't see Evander Kane at least till after the All-Star game.
I think that's a safe bet, Drew. I think with the concussions, you have to tread really lightly, and especially with a player who engages in contact almost continuously throughout a game.
I mean,
he seems to get off on it almost, and I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, but it makes you err on the side of caution if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, Claude Noel, and the Jets management and coaching staff.
Exactly. He played entirely in Thursday's game, didn't miss a shift.
Well, they don't know where it came from. That's the whole worry again about these concussions.
That's
Drew.
Right.
And if you don't know where it emanates from, you don't know how to, I guess, learn from it and protect against it, so to speak.
He played Thursday's game. He played, a normal game. I thought he was dangerous at times. Didn't get on the score sheet, but he played. Yeah. He was a significant threat out there. That's for sure. No signs of anything happening. Shows up to practice yesterday. Isn't feeling well. Doesn't even get on the ice. And by this morning, diagnosed with a concussion.
And see, I'm not sure if you. I know Richie was out of town and wasn't at the game. And, Drew, I know you were watching the game as a fan. Remus and I were up in the press box. The only hit that I can think of that might have concussed him is on one occasion he went after Tyler Myers, who's 6'7".
That's right.
And Tyler Myers got the better of him.
It was just a standard hockey play. It wasn't even anything that you paid attention to.
Let's be honest. How many guys can actually move, first of all,
none.
Let alone hit Tyler Myers, but move that guy? He's one of the biggest guys in the league.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I can think of. But I was a little bit shocked to find it out this morning. Brian Munns broke the news, and Gary Lawless after that. And it's a little bit surprising. Maybe there was another hit, but as far as I'm concerned, that was the hit.
Well, as Richie said, with concussions, you never know where it happened. It could have easily happened a couple of days ago. It could have happened in Ottawa.
That's
it could
true.
Have happened in New Jersey.
That's true.
A concern, especially because if it did happen a couple of days ago and they didn't notice it, and it's no fault to the team or even to Evander. But then what happens there is you have a guy playing with a concussion. And then, as we saw with Crosby, if you're playing with a concussion and you get rubbed up against the boards by like a guy like Victor Hedman, a big player, also 6'6", 6'7", that size, you put the player at further risk, and that's difficult to know. And that's the problem that's happening in the National Hockey League, and the equipment needs to change, and the rules need to change, and the game needs to adjust, because right now, as the rules are, and as the players are, with the lack of respect they seem to show each other, this problem is not going to fix itself. And I know we're going to have to wait till the end of the season for some significant changes, whether it be rules and equipment and such, but you have to hope that there aren't going to be many more concussions through the end, because it's an endless stream and it's happening to the best players. And, the Jets fans are worse off for, next three games. They're going to lose arguably their most exciting player.
Exactly right.
In the first period, before Mark Stewart and Cody McCormick fought, it was Drew Stafford who Mark Stewart hit, correct?
That's right.
And it was a clean hit.
Clean hit, absolutely.
Clean hit, and then McCormick comes off the bench And you could argue that it maybe could have been an instigator penalty.
You know what? I said to Laura, I was in my seats with Laura, and I said to her...
Tell people who Laura is.
Laura's my fiance, of course. I think they all know that by now. I said to Laura, if the ref had any cojones, he would call an instigator penalty there.
And for anyone who wasn't watching the game at the MTS Center on TV, McCormick came off of the bench, skated right at Stewart, and fought him. And that's why in the Free Press... And I just wanted to say, Richie, on your topic of player safety and player respect, in that game... Nikolai Antropov, as we all know, was also fined for boarding TJ Brennan. I think that shouldn't have been a fine. That's just my personal opinion. Okay. But hold on. I'm digressing here for a second. Okay. But generally speaking, in that game, I thought it was a generally well-played game. There weren't any cheap shots. You could argue that Antropov's was, and he was fined for it. I thought that it was just a bigger player going against a smaller player along the glass. But I think that in that case, when Stewart hits Stafford cleanly. Stafford is not known for being a tough player.
Well, he's big, though.
But he is big.
Drew's about 6'3", 220.
I thought that was natural, even with the instigator penalty not being called notwithstanding. Yeah. I still think that Stewart and McCormick took care of the play of what happened on the ice naturally. They fought it out.
But can we get into that for 1 second, Azzy? The whole idea, and let's see if you guys agree quickly. I want to get back to your point, but on that point... The instigator rule.
Yeah.
You know, why is it so prohibitive for a guy to really, you know, a guy, Cody McCormick, who's a fourth line right winger, who means little to the team of anything, to the Buffalo Sabres with endless amounts of talent, although this year they haven't obviously demonstrated that.
He's a grinder who fights a lot.
He'll get 2 minutes for the instigator and 10-minute misconduct. If you're Lindy Ruff, why do you care? I know you don't want to give up a power play, but if you're trying to build cohesion on a team that won't stick up for Ryan Miller, why is a 2-minute penalty and a 10-minute misconduct going to act as a preventative factor from the overall team-building aspect of what the Sabres are trying to do? I mean, the instigator gets talked about as if it's this massive five-minute major that would allow you to score as many goals as you want on the power play, and then you get kicked out of the game. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the rule simply states it's 2 minutes and then 10-minute misconduct.
Yeah, and the thing is, and we all know that Don Cherry hates it, and you can say whatever you want, if whether you're on the side of pro-fighting or anti-fighting, the instigator rule really was put in place to reduce fighting or to penalize fighting that takes place.
But they never seem to call it. That was a perfect example. Yeah. By the way,
if you're McCormick, clearly you took the risk because you're going to miss, if you're McCormick, you're missing literally one or two shifts out of that 10-minute misconduct, and you'll get sitting in the box for 2 minutes.
Right.
And if you think at the end of the day, it's going to build that, you know, that quote-unquote team building that goes on in the locker room in an 82-game season, what's one penalty?
It's nothing. You're right. Remus is telling us it wasn't Drew Stafford. It was Luke Adam that Mark Stewart hit.
Yeah, Adam is a rookie, obviously, who's also not a very physical player.
No, but, you know, the point is, why doesn't the ref make the call? I know it might not be a huge deterrent. I understand that point. But everybody...
That's my point of why he wouldn't make it. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's on the books. Then get it off the books, then. Either you can't have it both ways.
No, I know. I agree.
You can't have it both ways.
I didn't see it, but you're explaining to me what happened. It happens all the time.
He hit him clean. He hit him twice. It was both two good hits. And McCormick came off the bench and went right at him. Just made a beeline for him. Didn't even look to play the puck. Didn't even look to hide it a little bit. Made a beeline for Stewart. Stewart's been around this league long enough. He's going to respond to that. He's going to take
Stewart's
up that challenge.
Yeah, Stewart's a man.
Love that hit. You guys know I'm a big fan of the Scott Stevens New Jersey Devils days.
It was a textbook clean hit.
That is a textbook clean hit that got the team into it. And that's the way body checking should be in the NHL. Body checking is a huge part of the game.
But you make the point about it gets the team into it. That's one of the things I hear about most. It gets the team into it. But more importantly,
if it's a clean hit,
it makes a player worry on the opposing team, worry about getting hit and going up the middle. Or getting hit up the boards. That's the idea of hitting, is making a player think twice and hesitate and lose that...
Purposeful hitting.
Exactly. The timely plays and the timing that you need to be successful in the National Hockey League, you want to get in there and inhibit that. That's what hitting's supposed to do.
Absolutely. Well, and we'll get back into the hit that aspect of that game a little bit later on. Just some more roster notes from today.
Sure.
Because we want to get those right off the bat. So Eric Fehr is going to take Vander Kane's spot on the first line.
I don't get that. Are we going to get into that?
I want to get into that next segment. Okay. I want to do the lines in the next segment.
Okay.
Tim Stapleton, out of tonight's game with a lower body injury. He tweaked something. I think it was sort of an aggravation of something that's probably been lingering. So he's out of the lineup as well. Coming into the lineup for the Jets tonight, Patrice Cormier and Antti Miettinen.
I'm digressing here completely.
Okay.
But why would they reveal concussion injuries being the injuries that the players would be most susceptible to long-term problems and not reveal lower and upper body injuries.
Well, you and I
agree with Richie 100%.
We talked about this off air earlier. Right. I mean, that's a good question. You know, why do they admit? They won't tell you what a lower, you know, if the guy's got a bruised knee, they won't tell you, God forbid. But if the guy's head has been run, they tell you that.
And that's the long-term susceptible injury concern, is the head. Like, look at Sidney Crosby, obviously, as one of many examples. Mark Savard, other examples. But the knee injury, it's like, what? The guy's not going to slash. The guy's wearing a pad over his knee anyway.
And, Richie, I remember me and you had this, you and I, pardon me, had this conversation weeks ago about this. And we've seen this more and more post-lockout. And it's because the owners and the general managers do it for business reasons. They don't want to... Sure. But they don't want someone to know that one of their quote-unquote assets, players, is susceptible, and it affects their trade value potentially.
True, and also, although they get to scan the player before, but they get to test them with their doctors. But also, it's a factor of there's not enough betting on the National Hockey League to make them reveal the injuries, because that's why the NFL does it.
Drew, exactly.
Continue with the roster notes. That's
so,
a good point.
So Cormier and Miettinen are into the lineup. Obviously, Kane and Stapleton are out of the lineup. Fair takes Kane's spot on the top line. And the question we're still not sure about, we sort of expect that he'll be back in the lineup.
No, he'll be back.
Zach Bogosian?
He's back.
We're officially?
Yes, officially.
Okay, Zach Bogosian is back in the lineup.
Floods out.
They flood over Jones?
Yes.
I don't totally agree with that one.
Apply for coach of the Winnipeg Jets then.
Obviously.
I'll tell you what, though. This team is thin on the left side, and of natural left wingers, aside from Tanner Glass and Andrew
Kane.
Ladd.
Kane's out. Yeah, you're okay. Right.
They haven't played Miettinen on the left side for a significant amount of the last few games. Miettinen's a right winger. Now they're going to throw Fair on the top line tonight. We'll talk about that after, but he's going to be on the left wing.
Yeah.
I mean, hold on a second here. It's going to be trouble.
They don't have very many
guys not on their natural positions.
The Jets are 3 points out of a playoff spot here, and I know we're going to preview tonight's game next segment. But
thank God for they have to
start. They're flip flopping guys from wing to center. Burmistrov. I mean, I've had a huge issue, and I know you guys have too, with Burmistrov on the fourth line.
Well, if you're going to, let's go to break.
Because I want to talk about Burmistrov, about the idea of what we've been arguing for on the show. I don't want it to be, there to be a common, misperception. Is it misperception a word?
Yeah. Misconception.
Misconception, that's what I meant.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets lines. We'll go through the forwards of the defense. We'll talk the Florida Panthers.
There's lots to talk about today.
Lots to talk about, exactly. When news breaks, it's good that it breaks on Saturday mornings. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. If you want to get in touch with us, we're always happy to hear from you. Best tweets might get read on air. We might even send you a new Illegal Curve toque. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
True, it's amazing that you're able to to preview that segment and come right back from break while dancing to that crazy techno music.
Really? At this point in time, are you surprised that I can pull that all off?
Your game and your hosting skills are multifaceted.
I am the utmost of a professional here, Mr. Pollock. You should know that by now.
It's great to have you here, Drew.
Yeah, you're speechless. Is that what you are? You're absolutely speechless?
Something like that.
Okay, this segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done.
I tasted the difference last night.
And how was it?
A great meal.
Great pizza?
And Isabella.
Yeah, and Isabella.
I forget the other one was called.
Yeah, two pizzas? One guy.
I've had the pepino there with the arugula. Cilantro.
No, I think it's arugula.
No, cilantro.
Mine had arugula.
The pepino was a great pie.
It was good. It was packed in there.
Yeah?
Packed. I saw Shane.
Who's Shane?
Shane Knighty.
Shane Knighty.
Yeah.
Sheriff.
The sheriff was there.
The man.
It was a good time.
That's good.
Yeah, it was packed.
Was he the only Stanley Cup champion there, or was there...
That was it. There's no other Stanley Cup champs.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Our friend Hart Jacob, though, is a fan of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, so, like...
He's kind of a Stanley Cup champion.
He's a proxy Stanley Cup winner.
Yeah.
More importantly, leftovers?
Yeah, there's leftovers.
Leftovers here in the studio for me to eat?
No, but, Drew, I can send some your way in the mail.
Thank you. Appreciate that. It travels well, right? You can ship a frozen pie?
Ship a frozen pie.
Okay, anyways, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, sponsor of this segment. Let's talk about the Jets lines ahead of tonight's Jets-Panthers game. Puck drop, 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Rick Ralph with the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show beginning at 5. So the top line now, for, inexplicable reason, seems to be Eric Fair on the left,
yep.
Brian Little at center, and Blake Wheeler on the right. I'm guessing the second line is still that dynamic Ladd, Antropov, and Wellwood line.
Yep.
GST would be the third line?
This is a heck of a lineup.
Yep. And then the fourth line, you're going to have Mietinen on
the right side.
On the right side.
Stapleton in the middle.
No, Stapleton's out.
Cormier in the middle.
And your left winger is...
Who are we forgetting right now?
Burmistrov.
That's right.
Is Burmistrov playing fourth line?
Well, it's Burmistrov on the second line or the fourth line. And then Wellwood. It's usually...
I know
it's probably Wellwood on the right wing on the second line, and then Burmy on left wing on the fourth line. Which these lines are the thing that we were talking about off air before the show started, and we knew that Stapleton and Kane weren't going to play. Is that the natural thing would be to move Ladd back to the line that was the line for the first month of the season.
That line hasn't done anything though.
It hasn't. But
When they put that line together, how many games ago was that? Was that against San Jose 3 games ago at home or so? When they put that line back together?
Yeah,
it was awful.
Yeah, it didn't work.
You know what?
Really, Drew, you're dealing with the GST line's been together for the majority of the season.
Yep.
The Ladd-Wellwood Antropov line basically has as well. So really, what you're dealing with is two new lines, and you're dealing with Fair up on the top line.
Yeah.
On the left side. I'm assuming they're going to want to do is use Little and Wheeler's speed to the outside and in the offensive zone to get some one-timer shots or quick shots to Fair on his off wing. Now, that's the one advantage Fair has there. Obviously, he's not moving that well. He's played very poorly. I think that's evident to everybody who's been watching the Jets games.
I thought he played one of his better games on Thursday.
I didn't see Thursday's game, so let me qualify that by saying. But overall, I mean, he's played very poorly.
No argument.
Now, him on the left side, and it may not be natural for him, but does give him the ability to shoot off his off wing. And if Wheeler and Little, who are both fast, can create space and allow him to get some one-timers or quick shots on the side there, I think it could result in maybe some success for him. In terms of the fourth line, I like the fact that Mietinen's now on the right wing, not on the left wing, because he didn't look comfortable there at all. So you put him in the right wing, you have Cormier up, who forechecks, who hits, and can win some face-offs.
Yeah.
But Burmistrov, I don't mind that line, those three guys together. I really don't. I think that could create something because Mietinen has some offensive skills.
Yep.
He's not a shooter. And the problem on that line is going to be, I mean, it's your fourth line, so there's going to be problems. But the problem on that line is Mietinen doesn't have a good shot. Burmistrov doesn't either. And Cormier is no shooter. So your chances are going to be in close and off the forecheck and things like that. But it's a fourth line right now, and this team can't score. This team isn't winning games 5-1. This team can't win games 5-1.
Well, the four goals they scored on Thursday was the most they've scored against since the game against Colorado right after Christmas.
Right, and so essentially, again, the second and third lines are staying the same, and then you're seeing movement on the first and fourth lines. And on the fourth line, you've got guys that at parts of the season have all played center. And the thing that's nice about this, and we've talked about this for weeks now, and Eric Fair has struggled, and he has lingering issues from the shoulder. It's not a surprise or a debate anymore. So for him, it's a good chance for him to get going. And like Richie said, this line's going to have size on the wings. And Wheeler, we saw from Wheeler and last game when he came back, he missed 2 games with the throat injury,
mm-hmm.
took a puck in the throat from Sikora. We've seen that Blake Wheeler can create a lot of room for other players. And hopefully, Eric Fair is able to kind of get some of the... the thing with Fair is the type of guy that, as opposed to in junior with the Wee Kings when he was a prolific scorer, Fair's a guy that he has to get goals in front of the net.
He's got a good shot.
And slot.
That's just it. Right. And that's what I wanted to say. For the first time
doesn't
on
Thursday... Doesn't have the speed of Blake
No,
Wheeler.
He doesn't have any speed at all, really. He's a speed... But on the first time on Thursday, what I noticed is he actually took a shot from a scoring chance in the slot, and that was one of the first times where you sort of have seen him unleash the wrist shot.
Even his goal this year was like a brutal angle.
It should never have gone in. Yeah. But his shot on Thursday was,
second period, right?
I believe so. I don't recall exactly, but
it was a
good
scoring chance.
It was a score where a scorer needs to shoot from, where you're in the slot and you have a good, and you have space and you can fire it. And he took the shot. He didn't score, obviously, but it maybe was the first sign I've seen that he's regaining a little bit of confidence in the shoulder.
Yeah, no, and Drew, it is a confidence issue, I think, with him.
Yeah.
Because he's played enough now, so his legs are there. Yep. I mean, he's not a fast skater, but his legs are there, meaning that he doesn't feel like he's
and guys,
behind
and
in
guys,
terms of his endurance.
And Richie, it's good. It really is a good opportunity. There's, let's be honest. This year on the Jets, With the forward group that they have, there have been a lot of opportunities for guys, and a guy like Tim Stapleton has taken advantage of it. He's become a Claude Noel favorite. He's not playing tonight, but he's taken advantage of it. The guy has not played a full season in the NHL.
If he's taking advantage of it, then they're taking advantage of fans' money.
No, but you know what I mean. And the thing is, Eric Fehr has an opportunity, and if he can get going, Eric Fehr is a scorer. Eric Fehr is not a checking winger. So if he can get going, he's not going to stay on the top line, because as soon as Kane comes back, he's their best player. He's back on the first line. But that gives them an option on the second line, because Eric Fehr, if he's going 100%, he's a better option than Kyle Wellwood on the right wing. I'm sorry.
Your point is very well taken, that this is an opportunity for other people to step up.
Well, that's every injury, though.
Of course it's every injury.
And it doesn't mean it's not the case. It is the case, but it's every injury.
I mean, this is an opportunity for Eric Fehr to step up. I mean, personally, I'd rather see Alex Burmistrov playing in a more significant role than on the fourth line.
Let's get into Burmistrov quickly.
Okay.
And I just want people to understand that when we're talking about Burmistrov fourth line versus second line, at least what I mean by that, I don't want to speak for all the three of us here, but what I mean by that is I want to see what he is. Meaning, you know, he's in his second year in the National Hockey League. They're not going to send him down to the minors, likely. He has, you know, a three-year entry-level contract. He's in the middle of the second year now. He's halfway through his entry-level deal. We want to see what he is. And by that, meaning, give him the ice time to see how he fares. Now, having said that...
Pardon the pun.
But having said that, in his past few games, and I want to see more ice time because I want to be able to gather from what I'm watching whether or not he has potential to be that player, to be that top six player. From what I've been watching, at the beginning of the season, I didn't like the fact that he was making a bunch of moves that got him nowhere. I thought now was the preseason for the most part. At the beginning of the season, he kind of picked it up in probably games 3 through 10. Overall, though, since he's kind of been elevated back over some periods of time, he continues to make too many dangles, tries to beat guys one-on-one. He's still pretty solid defensively, although not as good as he was at the beginning of the season. His play hasn't been impressive. Now,
let me interrupt you for a second. The reason why he's dangling and truly trying to do things on his own, how much of a factor do you think that is in that he's not playing with especially talented players?
I'm saying that when he was put up to the second or first lines. So he hasn't demonstrated that he's been able to play with those players or make them flourish, and he looks softer on the puck. He doesn't look as good. That doesn't mean I don't still want to see him more time, because I'm looking at this as a big picture.
Sure.
This team isn't any good. I mean, this team might make the playoffs and, by the grace of God, win the division, finish third, and actually have home ice advantage, and who knows. But overall, this team is not Chicago, not San Jose, not Vancouver.
They're
not
elite.
So the point is, in the big picture, you want to see what you're dealing with. That's why I want to see him. Doesn't mean I think he automatically should be there every game. But I'd like to see him for the majority of games up there, because we need this to be a learning experience.
You need to know what you have in the future going forward with Alex Burmistrov.
So when he's playing poorly, I still like to see him up there for the most part, because I want to see how he deals with that. Now, as a coach, though, and as this is interesting, because as a coach, you want to win every game. And that's where the conflict comes in. The coach wants to win every game because his job's on the line. The GM, and I'm not saying Chevalier and Noel seem to be on the same page, but the GM likes to want to evaluate talent and see what he's got long term. So how do you do both? And that's why they're kind of putting him on the fourth line and back on the second line. Maybe that's added into the fact that that's been a contributing factor to the idea that he hasn't gained confidence or any kind of comfort level.
If the logical trade is Wellwood for Burmistrov, because that's usually what it's been. When Burmistrov goes up to play on the second line, Wellwood goes down to the fourth line.
Right.
That's generally how it's been.
Yeah.
I haven't seen, you know, putting Burmistrov on the second line as much of a drop-off compared to Wellwood. Wellwood's producing there.
He's been worse.
He's been worse than Wellwood?
Yeah.
Wellwood, who doesn't shoot, doesn't go into the corners, doesn't do anything besides really stand in front and have some nifty moves in front?
He's been worse? I believe I've stated many times where I think Wellwood stands on this team and should stand on this team. But he's a better passer, and he has made Ladd and Antropov better.
Yep.
Because Burmistrov really hasn't played well. Now, I really do think that if they're going to give Burmistrov chances, and they still have to give him chances, they have to play him, Drew and Iz. They have to play him, to me, with Antropov. And that's been the one thing that's lacking. They don't play him significantly with Antropov. And Antropov, I know he scored last game, but he hasn't done anything.
He's been very bad in the last month, and it's no surprise. Anybody who's watched the Jets this year knows that Burmistrov was at his best in the beginning of the year when he had chemistry with Antropov. He has not found, and Drew, you mentioned talent, and a guy like Burmistrov is super talented. The guy's going to have a great career, and it should be with the Jets. I think he's going to be one of the core players. He's struggled, and when he's not playing with Antropov or on the top line, which he hasn't been on the top line much this year, if at all, and he struggled.
What do you see for him? Like, you've seen him play a lot. I mean, what do you think right now? I mean, obviously, it's only his second season, but what do you see as his upside?
You can answer that, but what areas does he need to improve in also?
We talked about that.
Well, Burmistrov, I'm not quite sure if he's a top-line player. I mean, we've talked about this before, and I think a player like Burmy could be better suited as a center. But, I mean, I think he's got all the talent in the world, and he's still very young, and he came into the league as an 18-year-old. I think he can be a very good second line, either center or winger. I think it's a bit of a stretch to say he's going to be a first line NHLer, but I think that there are certain things about his game that are very desirable and things about his game that aren't very desirable. I think he's a hard working player who's got a lot of one on one moves, but I think his game is still immature and unfinished at this point.
I'll tell you who he reminds me of a bit. A little bit, and there's some variation in terms of how they play the game, but he reminds me a little bit of Maxim Afinaganov.
Hold that thought. I want to go to break. When we come back, Mike Johnson from TSN Jets is going to join us. I want to talk about why you think he looks like Maxim Afinaganov. You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. As quickly as we had Mike Johnson, we lost Mike Johnson. He had something pop up, so we'll try and get Mike Johnson on in the next couple weeks or so. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day, Jets-Panthers gets underway at 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center. Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, Shane Carbone-90. We're going to change him to Sheriff.
I've been working on my Noel impression.
Really?
Yeah, maybe I'll toss that out in the second hour.
Let's hear it now.
No, it's sort of a second or a third.
I'll
hour
do it for you guys between the breaks, and you can tell me if you think it's funny enough to come on.
Okay.
Can I do my Drew impression?
Why don't you do your Drew impression interviewing Noel, and I'll be Noel?
That's a great idea.
Yeah. That's a terrible idea, as far as I'm concerned. Anyways, Rick Ralph in the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com.
Like the guys don't want to win.
You know, your second hour. Facebook.com.
You know what they're doing wrong out there.
/illegalcurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Before the break, we were going to talk about Alex Burmistrov's ceiling. And, Richie, you said he reminds you of Maxim Afinaganov.
He does a bit. Drew, I think...
Is this because all Russian players have to be compared to other Russian players?
I think there is a certain style that some of them, they come from... You know, it's a certain Russian system that they come from, and they play a certain way. It's not all of them, and it's not to group them all together, but he just reminds me of that player.
Okay. Explain.
You know, Drew, he's probably a little bit bigger than Afinaganov, not much, right? A left-handed shooter, excuse me. They shoot the same way. They both felt the need to always dangle their way and stick handle their way out of trouble. And many times to their detriment, trying to do it themselves. And there were nice goals, and if you watch the highlights, I'm sure if you YouTube Maxim Afinaganov, you'll see some beauty goals. And there's spurts of games in watching Burmistrov that you see beautiful plays. But overall, I mean, they both didn't have... And right now, Burmistrov doesn't have a great shot. Afinaganov didn't have a great shot. You know, he could stick handle and sometimes use teammates. I think Burmistrov uses teammates a little bit better, but they're fairly diminutive players that feel the need to always stick handle their way out of trouble. And they can skate pretty well, and they can do those things, and they can have nice highlight goals. But overall, the product, at least at this point, hasn't, you know... Afinaganov, people would say, as he never reached his potential. And sure. I think right now, you're seeing people think of Burmistrov's potential as maybe higher than it could be. And I think that needs to be, we need to, you know, channel that confidence in what he can be, because I'm not so sure he can be what some people think.
Do you think the Jets are trying to change his style by playing him in a fourth line role as opposed to in a top two line role?
Drew, I think what happened with Burmistrov first and foremost is that the Thrashers brought him in last year, and I think the Jets would never have done that.
Sure.
And I think what happened now is they have a player who they probably like to put into the minors. But they're burning entry level time and they're paying money and they really don't have anything better than him. So his development was kind of forced upon them and they're trying to deal with it in a way that I'm not so sure they're comfortable with. Now, are they trying to change him in a fourth line role? I'm not so sure, Drew, because actually defensively,
he's not bad defensively.
He's pretty good. Now he hasn't been great lately, but he's pretty good. So generally speaking, young players need to work on their defense. So that's why you have the issue of, what are you doing on the fourth line? Because actually his defensive skills are better than his offensive game right now. So how do you work on that? And can you work on your offensive game on the fourth line? I'm not so sure. So that's another reason why we like to see him a little bit more up there to see what he's all about.
Richie, I think the Finneganov comparison is a good one. I think that's a really good comparison. I do agree with you that Bermi has, he's struggled. And I when you start a guy off in a position where he's going to be relied upon for the bulk of your scoring, this is a young team, one of the youngest teams in the league. It still is. Nothing's changed. Picking up a few players has changed that. But it's possible that they're trying to maybe try to get him going on the fourth line. I don't think at this point you can say that they're trying to change him at all. I think that he's a player that needs to be coached a lot. I mean, he's yep. still very young. Kane is still very young, but Kane has natural ability that many players, hockey players, just don't have. Bermi has that, not in the same abundance as Kane. Yeah. But yeah, Bermi, you know, he is part of this team, and he's relied upon, and he has not been producing. And Antropov, up until last game, was not producing either. And, you know, Bermi is someone who's going to form a huge part of this team. And for him to not have success is detrimental. Secondary scoring is important. All of the good teams, I'll get into that in my three things I learned this week with Richie, which will form six things we learned this week. We're bringing that back. I mean, you got to have the secondary scoring. And yeah. and we can you know, debate Kyle Wellwood's place on the second line, but right now you can't debate. Kyle Wellwood's third on the team in scoring. And
I think that says more about the team than it does. Kyle Wellwood.
It does. Yeah, and that's what my point was.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, I just want, it's what we said before, and I know it's always the, you know, the push-pull between wanting to win now and wanting to see what you have in the future, but, you know, Alex Burmistrov, the way he started the year, which he started quite well, I might add,
yeah.
playing with Antropov, and they've never put the two of them back together.
They have a few times, not for, extended periods, but they have a few times. But
got an email from Joe from Winnipeg, and he makes sort of an interesting point in there. That you think there's any validity to the point that they don't want to put Bermi and Antropov back together because they don't want them to develop chemistry because Antropov is a target for being on his way out at the trade deadline.
No, because I think if that's the case, then you'd want to put him with Burmistrov to develop chemistry to increase his value on the trade market.
Even though it might...
Doesn't matter.
You don't think long-term there'd be any hindrance to Burmistrov?
I don't think so. I don't mind the idea, and I appreciate the email from Joe, but I don't think that's the case because you're really trying to increase a guy's value at the deadline, and if it's going to increase Antropov's value, they're probably more than happy to do that.
To increase his scoring, to whether or not it's sort of fake, quote-unquote, or not.
There's also no indication that Antropov is on the, or any other player at this point is on the trading block. You can speculate based on salaries which guys would be sold. But once again, Antropov has struggled big time. I think he has one or two goals in the last month, and you know a lot of guys have struggled in that secondary role. The only guy that hasn't struggled really is Blake Wheeler. I mean, Blake Wheeler, game after game, is the Jets' best player.
I'll tell you what, Blake Wheeler, I thought, was absolutely dynamic on Thursday night against Buffalo.
That's what I've heard.
The way he came through the neutral zone, and I don't know if this might have to do with Buffalo style playing. If you were there, you would be able to know it better than I was, Richard. It seemed like Buffalo would sit back and let him gain speed and momentum through the neutral zone, and then try and attack him sort of at the blue line. But by then, he was a freight train barreling down on him. It was Dustin Byfuglien on a rush. He was so big and so fast, they had absolutely no. They couldn't handle him.
The
now,
question
of course,
I have, Drew, is do you see that tonight? I mean, that's a question. Or is it
well, they need
the
it to be
bumps?
Tonight. I mean, if Blake Wheeler is, is Blake Wheeler your best forward in the lineup tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Yep.
So you need him to
or
be that
Ladd,
good.
One of the two, him and Ladd.
Well, but Ladd's not going to, Ladd doesn't, you know, strike fear into any opponent's hearts when he's got the puck and he's rushing up in the neutral zone.
True. He's more of a guy in front of the net, rebounds and
tips, know. Like on the Ron, yeah. on the Ron Hainsey shot, yeah. you know, lots of that stuff in front of the net, within a couple feet of the goal. Yeah. Blake Wheeler, I mean, you know, people around me up in the seats, you know, in the 300s where I was on Thursday, when Blake Wheeler got the puck and got a rush going, they're like, you know, people were feeding off the excitement from that.
Well, guys, when you look at you know, January, the Jets are 3-6. Evander Kane, before he went down with the injury, had not scored a goal in 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brian Little was injured for a little bit there, And you look at the team, and you know Kyle Wellwood has you know he's gotten a few points, not very many goals, but in the last 3 weeks, the guy that's the two guys that have really been driving the bus are Wheeler and Ladd, and
absolutely.
Blake Wheeler, you know, had the horrible start, and you know he took some criticism. And he's really developed the confidence, and he has emerged as the best player. And that's with Kane in the lineup.
Kane is still better than Blake Wheeler is. I know the score sheet doesn't
Kane over the past few games, 10 games, has become predictable in terms of trying to go wide, and all they're doing is all the defenseman's doing is he's sealing the board. So Kane has to use his line mates more and cut to the middle once in a while to keep a defenseman honest. So those are things that he'll work on. Yeah, is he still the better player overall? Yeah, I mean he's in his third season in the National Hockey League, and he's outscoring and the guys, and he is the best forward on the team. Wheeler has ability and potential, but I'm going to ask you this. You know, what do people see as his ceiling? Because to me, it's a second-line right winger. He is what he is. He's good. He can be good for spurts, and he can be poor for spurts. He's a second-line right winger, and that's nothing to scoff at.
This team
needs a second-line right winger.
I don't think he's going to exceed the ceiling he's playing at the moment. I'm not saying that I expect him to develop into some sort of fabulous 80-point player in the NHL. That's not going to happen. But if he's playing... if he's playing with confidence and he's playing with speed and he's playing with aggression, he is somebody that other teams do have to game plan for.
Yep.
That's always been the rub, Drew, is that he does that for spurts and doesn't for other spurts.
Right. And that's why I'm curious tonight. It's easy to play big and play aggressive and play fast when you have a guy like Evander Kane who the other teams have to game plan
that's
for.
Right. Yep, that's right.
Today, the Florida Panthers, I mean, they probably didn't get into Winnipeg till 4 a.m.
Yeah.
But
bad weather in Chicago.
Bad weather in Chicago. That game started late. So the Panthers did arrive last night, but they arrived very late. So that's a big advantage for the Jets. Today it'll be interesting to see, because Blake Wheeler really is the only guy that the Florida Panthers defensively have to game plan for. So it'll be interesting to see how he can adapt to being the sole target of a team's defensive strategy.
Yeah, and I agree with that, Drew. And you know, tonight, the good news, the bad news is Kane. And we hope that, you know, We hope that Kane can get back to the lineup as soon as possible. Let's just leave it at that. We hope that he's not out for that long, because if he is, the Jets are going to be in real tough to make the playoffs. They're already in tough to make the playoffs, and Wheeler is that player. And I think Bogosian coming back is very important too, because starting with when he basically went out, and Byfuglien's been out now for 10 games, I believe. I mean, those are the two best defensemen on the team, and Anstrom is very good, and Anstrom has 3 goals in his last 3 games and has been very good, but Bogosian is ultra talented, and him coming back is going to help them a lot with breaking out, because struggled, and so it's good that Bogo's back, because he's brings a lot of speed and offense from
but
the back
just,
end.
Thankfully for this team, they're in a terrible division. In Washington, I haven't been sold on all year. Nothing's happened since that coaching change. Florida's nothing special. Tampa Bay's obviously a mess right now, and Carolina's doing the full rebuild here with a couple moves, so I mean, this is their chance, is the division, as far as I'm concerned. Pittsburgh's going to get it going, and these teams are going to get it going in front of them. So it's a matter of how they can fare against these division rivals. And tonight's game is huge. And then,
they play Florida another 4 times, including tonight.
Yeah, tonight's game is
you got to beat Florida 3 out of 4 times. If you don't beat Florida 3 out of 4 times, you don't deserve to make the playoffs. Washington's going to win the division. Let's be honest.
I mean, Washington might win the division just because the other teams are so bad. Yeah. But Washington isn't very good. I'm not sold on this team at all. I don't like what I've seen in person.
There's only going to be 2 teams in this division that make the playoffs.
I think it'll only be one team.
And I think it's going to be 1. And I don't think that team, I mean, that team will have home ice advantage by the rules. And if it's the Jets, that certainly means more, I think, than Florida or Washington. And it would be something special. Having said that, I think that all of these teams really aren't playoff worthy.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Florida Panthers, tonight's opponent here on Mr. Lube Game Day. Yep. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Lube Game Day on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. In case you missed any of the breaking news right off the top of the program, Evander Kane of the Winnipeg Jets is out with a concussion. He will not play tonight. indeterminate how much longer he's going to be out. I'd be
surprised.
Gary
said at least a week.
I'd be surprised to see him Monday or Tuesday on the road trip.
Gary said at least a week. Just said told me at least a week, and so Gary being Gary Lawless, and we're assuming it's post All Star break.
There's no reason to bring him back soon.
Yeah. And the question becomes with Dustin Byfuglien not returning today, and most likely
he's not playing in the All Star game.
Well, no. The question is now that he's out and Kane is out, who goes? Wheeler?
No. Does a Jet have to go?
I think a Jet has to go.
I don't think so.
No? No.
I think
doesn't one team have to have a representative?
I think that's in baseball, I thought. I didn't think that's the hockey rule.
Oh, so, but that's, one team has to be, one player from each team has to be selected, but if there's an injury, he can be replaced by someone else?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what the rule is. I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's the All-Star game, for God. Yeah, who cares?
But, some people care.
I can't imagine it.
Who are those people?
Yeah, exactly. Who
Some
are those
people? People that watch.
Yeah. Well, anyways, let's talk about the Florida Panthers. They're tonight's opponent for the Winnipeg Jets. First and foremost, they played last night in Chicago, where they were defeated, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to double-check that, but I'm pretty sure they were defeated 3-0. Is that it?
3-1.
3-1. Pardon me. 3-1. They scored a meaningless third-period goal. So Chicago beats Florida 3-1 last night in Chicago. Terrible weather in Chicago. That game, which was supposed to start at 7:30 Winnipeg
Snowstorm.
Time.
Snowstorm.
That didn't end up getting started until 8 o'clock. You know, you figure it out. There was some question if Florida was even going to be able to fly out. They did fly out of Chicago last night.
They did.
They get into Winnipeg. They couldn't have got into Winnipeg. Well, puck drop at 8 o'clock. You know, game goes until 10:45, let's
probably
say.
About 3:30.
Yeah, they probably got into Winnipeg about 3:30 in the morning. So this is a tired...
Just in time to go to the green room.
Exactly. and to hang out with you there.
Just the same time that Drew got home.
Exactly. Only because I was probably out walking the dog or something. The dog
you got to get to bed earlier, Drew. You've been staying up too late. We need to have a talk after the show.
Okay. Yeah, you need to have a talk.
I'm looking forward to that talk, let me tell you.
Well, we don't actually talk to you when we're off air, so that'll be nice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Florida's a tired team. They played last night. As we've well documented, the Jets are 7-0 on home ice when the team that they're playing against is on the second half of a back-to-back.
They also got three guys back from injury last night, Scotty Upshaw, Jack Skilly, and Sean Bergenheim. Now, I mentioned that because it boosts their team, but also guys who have been away for injuries, the back-to-back is probably a little bit harder on them.
Sure, they don't have the endurance as they once did. It's the third meeting between the two teams?
Yes, they played in Florida one game.
That's Jets won in a shootout.
That crazy comeback, and then they won in a shootout.
Yeah, that was Halloween, was it not? I think it was, October 31st.
Yes, it was Halloween.
And then
I was dressed up as Gary Lawless, so I remember.
Drew was dressed up as a woman.
Go on.
Oh, sorry, that was October 21st.
Yeah, Richie, I never wanted to think about that again, and you just brought back so many memories, bad memories. I had nightmares for at least a week. Drew's shaved legs.
They weren't shaved. That was the problem.
And then, what were we just talking about? Oh, yeah, and then that Florida killed them here in a terrible game.
That November 20th, I believe November 27th.
That was a brutal one.
That was the worst game of the year so far. Florida 4-0 over the Jets. Really, simply put, this is a must-win game for the Winnipeg Jets.
This is a big game, Drew. And they need this one because you're playing a team on the second half of a back-to-back, not a good team, division rival, at home. I mean, there's very many reasons why you have to win this game. You had rest. You don't have any excuses. This is a no-excuse game. You got to win this one.
Yeah, and they play again in 2 weeks. The Jets, after tonight, they'll play three back-to-back games coming up in the next 3 weeks. They're going to play the Hurricanes this coming Monday and then the Rangers.
Okay.
So obviously the Rangers, I mean, arguably they could be cup winners this year. They're that good. And, you know, after that they've got a few games coming up, including Florida. And then they have two more back-to-back games coming up in early February. So the Panthers are the team that the Jets are chasing right now. And we can argue how many teams in the Southeast are going to make the playoffs. Could be one, could be two. It's definitely not going to be three unless something crazy happens.
That would be embarrassing for the league.
So the Jets have to win these games. They have to win them at home, and they have to win them away. They play two more against the Panthers at home, two more away. And in my opinion, the Jets are a better team than the Panthers. I mean, I can make a strong argument that the Jets are better in goal, better on defense, and better on forward. And right now the Panthers, I believe, have won three of the last 10.
I would say better on defense, better in goal, not better at forward.
Okay.
Florida's fair pretty enough. Deep in forward. If you remember, Chris Versteeg killed them last game.
The Jets
game.
Forwards are pretty bad.
Chris Versteeg, Drew, has one goal in his last 10 games. Just pointing it out.
That's fine.
He hasn't been exactly Mr. Hotcakes lately.
But Steven Weiss, I mean, you're putting guys like Versteeg, Weiss, and Fleischmann, and You know, Florida, and they Upshaw back now. They got guys, I mean, the Florida doesn't exactly have an all-star cast up there, but the Jets are really weak at forward right now.
Jose Theodore played net for Florida last night, so I would expect we're going to see Scott Clemenson.
Yeah, I mean, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
They're obviously, I know, they both have their significant flaws. They obviously haven't, aren't skating today, so there was no opportunity to meet with the media or anything.
Mm-hmm. Who got the third goal for the Hawks last night?
For the Hawks? The third goal for the Hawks last night was Patrick Kane.
Patrick Kane, right. And
first goal in eight games,
and it was a 2-on-1, and it went and it went right through Theodore's legs. And it reminded me of back in the day when Theodore was the Montreal Canadiens goalie, and there was a picture of Jose Theodore with the beach ball going through.
Sure.
Theodore has done a great job this year. I mean, he's done a lot better than I would have thought. Jacob Markstrom's injured right now. But... you know, a guy like Jose Theodore, is he going to be able to steal games for the Panthers enough for them to get to the playoffs? Jovanovski's injured right now.
Yeah, that's a brutal one because you lose him in a fight.
Yeah.
And so without Jovanovski, that we have to talk about that, because without Jovanovski on the back end there,
yeah.
I mean, you're really relying on, you know, guys like Jason Garrison, Kulikov, and Campbell. Now, Kulikov...
Really like Kulikov.
Garrison's got a great one-timer. Kulikov can move the puck really well, a nice young player.
Yep.
Campbell's a great, great puck mover, great skater. So you have an offensive cast back there, but they can also be taking advantage of defensively.
And that's the thing, Richie. I think you nailed it. I think that group, if you think about all those guys are good offensive defensemen. Yep. And, you know, Drew, I know you want to get into this later. There was a really good article that Elliot Friedman wrote about getting free agents.
And what
he says is you can pick all of these guys that get all these offensive defensemen, and you know, their numbers might go down, but the guys that are really important are the defensive defensemen. And that's why I think getting a guy like Zach Bogosian back is so important.
Oh, yeah.
Because everybody projects him as you know, this Brian Leetch type of defenseman, or just not maybe not Brian Leetch, but everyone sees Zach Bogosian as this guy that's going to eventually get 50 points, and he might. But I think...
I don't think he will.
Okay, that's not my point. But my point is that Zach Bogosian offers more as a defenseman, a pure defensive defenseman.
True.
Great skater,
points
physical.
Is well taken.
And I think the Florida Panthers lack that. I don't think they have that many great physical defensemen.
You know,
Jovo is one of them.
They got an underrated D-man in Mike Weaver, who's an excellent penalty killer, and he's a solid defensive defenseman. But yeah, you're not talking about the guy of the quality of Bogosian, has he? I agree completely.
I mean, you have...
Or Bufflin.
They're hoping Eric Gibbertson turns into something like that, a big, strong defensive defenseman, move the puck out of his own zone. So they're hoping for that. You know, and that's something that with time we'll see. But yeah, I mean that point is well taken.
The power play, the Panthers' power play is a pretty decent power play that they can put out there, especially with, like you said, Garrison on the point with his rocket.
Garrison's coming out of nowhere with 13 goals.
It really has.
He's kind of developed in his late 20s. Like he played on the Panthers last year, but this year it's almost like you know, Garrison has become the new Sheldon Surrey out there.
Yeah, yeah, very good point, Ezzy.
Well, and
you got Campbell feeding the puck, and so you have offensive talent there. Kulikov, I believe, made that pass yesterday to Garrison for the goal. But
scored against the Jets when they were here in November.
Yeah.
It's not a bad lineup. It's not a bad lineup at all. What areas can the Jets really exploit, given their offensive limitations that they have tonight?
You're not going to get too much up the rush. You got to get a lot of zone pressure, meaning get the puck down low, work on these guys like Campbell. Campbell's weak on the puck. He'll take risks. And guys like that, Kulikov's still a young player who'll make mistakes. You can get the puck in deep, and you start cycling the puck, and you try and get these guys confused a bit and play the defenseman off the boards. I think you can get a lot of you can make some hay there.
Ezzy, John Madden plays for the Panthers now. Are you going to be able to handle going to a game with John Madden and not, you know, getting too excited?
Well, Richie, it's not like Dale Tallon likes to bring in old Chicago Blackhawks or anything.
Oh my God, I know.
I think the Florida Panthers now have, 25 guys that played on the 2010 Chicago Blackhawks team. But they signed him, I believe, a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And he was a guy that actually wanted to still play in the NHL. He kind of, you know, was around and... He wasn't that bad again with the Wild last year, so good for him getting
He's
one last...
He's lost a few steps, but yeah.
Richie. But it's good for him for getting a contract. He's getting regular time, and he'll be out there today. And he was one of my favorites back in the day, playing with Jay Pandolfo and Sergei Breland on the Devils.
That's right.
You really need to find better ways to spend your time than knowing that information.
I could watch Devils games 24 hours a day. That's what I like. That's my hobby. You like to go to wedding shows. I like to watch
Devils.
That's right.
You have to get registered on your, which place do you register?
EQ3?
Sharon's?
No, it's not really.
Drew, it doesn't matter where you get registered. You're not getting a gift from
me. No, I know that you two are, you guys are both lost causes in terms of a wedding gift.
Let's just say that I'm a little frugal with my money.
Yeah. 30th birthday, engagement party, new place, wedding. This guy wants a gift every half an hour.
You didn't give me any for my new place.
Exactly.
Let's go to break.
I brought a bottle of wine, didn't I?
I don't think so. Did you?
No, you bottled me with a bottle of wine.
Exactly. Anyways, a small difference. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mr. Lube Game Day here on TSN 1290.
Welcome back. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Mr. Lube Game Day, Jets-Panthers taking place 6 o'clock tonight at MTS Center. Rick Relf has the official Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 5 from 3 o'clock till 5 o'clock. Hustler and Lawless. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Check out the morning papers on there.
Exactly. The morning papers published each and every morning by our colleague Dave Minuk.
I thought we agreed that you weren't allowed to say Dave Minuk. I was the only one that could say Dave Minuk on air.
If that's been a new dictate, I was unaware of it.
Any good tweets during today?
Well, we'll get to those in a couple minutes.
Ohad Raffaelli, our good friend, wants a toque. He tweeted at us.
That's great.
Wants a free toque.
Yeah, we don't just give away free toques.
No, he had a nice tweet saying that we're the best hockey show on the planet.
Didn't Drew at the beginning...
Actually, we're on Hokie Show, but we've been called worse things.
Hokie Show.
By better people.
Yeah, exactly. This segment is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Be sure to join Illegal Curve Hockey for their weekly appearances at the Cheer Bar and Grill. If you want to go to tonight's Jets-Panthers game, the Budweiser Bud Bus will be making an appearance at the Cheer Bar and Grill
this afternoon. Driven by Drew.
It's interesting because
Drew will be driving the Bud
Bus. When I was in junior high,
Your bus driver's name was Bud, I'm aware.
Really?
I know.
Yeah,
same with mine. We had the same bus driver and all.
Did you save his number in your phone as Bud Bus Driver?
I didn't have cell phones. There were no cell phones then.
Yeah,
Some people had them.
1989 at this point in time.
Were car phones?
Yeah. They're car phones. They're big car phones. Remember the big car phones. Yeah, anyways, if you want to go to tonight's Jets-Panthers game, the Cheer opens at 3:30 this afternoon. Head over there. Settle in. Have a couple rounds. It's a nice Saturday afternoon. A little relaxing. You buy some Bud. Before you know it, you might be on the bus heading over to the Jets-Panthers game.
Drew, we've been at the Cheer for almost every single Jets game, except when we went to New York for those three games for your bachelor party.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm apologizing right now for embarrassing you in New York. But it's been a great time at the Cheer Bar and Grill. If you're driving right now or you're around that area, Osborne Village area, get down there. We gave away tickets Tuesday night.
Yeah. That was actually your parking tickets.
Yeah. Exactly. No, but we gave away a pair of tickets I believe his name was Bob Bassett.
I believe you're right.
And
did he play for the Stars and the Blues back
in
the...
That was Bob Bassett. Sorry, great hockey player, great name. But we gave away, he was excited, and you got it. They gave away tickets on Thursday night. We weren't there, obviously, we were at the game. But you got to go down there. They're going to be giving away two pairs. You're going to get to go to the game in the Bud Bus, which is, I think, making a few stops. So get down there. I mean, you have a chance to win some Jets tickets, drink some Bud. It sounds like a pretty cool Saturday afternoon.
In fact, I think you're heading over there right away, aren't you?
We're done at 3. I'm going to try to go win tickets at 3:30.
Yeah, exactly. That makes good sense. You look at the standings in the Southeast Division. I want to spend a little bit of time talking about... we've talked about how poor the division is. But, there's nothing to apologize for in terms of that, you play in that division, so you might as well make the best of it. Washington, Florida, both tied right now with 52 points. The Jets are 3 points back at 49 points.
Yep. 3 points out of the division lead.
Which makes all tonight's game all the more important. I mean, if you fall 5 points behind, then, I mean, it's certainly not over. But if you look at the important part is... look at the regulation wins versus the everything else in that division. Washington has 25 regulation wins.
Yep.
Winnipeg has 22 regulation wins. Florida has 29 regulation wins.
Right.
There's just a lot. I mean,
so you're not catching them there.
You're not catching them there.
No,
you're not catching them there.
Not with less than 40 games left in the season. That's a 7-game difference. No chance.
Yeah. It's so important, these games on home ice. The Jets have to take advantage of these games because... If they don't make hay now, and they don't make a little bit more hay on the upcoming road trip that they have,
Which is going to be tough, by the way.
Which is going to be tough. Very
Rangers
difficult
Rangers in there. You got a little Philly.
You have some Carolina. Easy. Yeah. Yeah. They go by the back-to-back. Monday they play Carolina. Yeah. Yep. Tuesday, New York.
Yep.
Week off.
Philly.
Then they go to Philly at the end of after the All-Star break. I believe all in all, is it a 5 or 6 game?
Seven game
road trip.
Six?
Yeah, I wrote my preview, which is available on legalcurve.com right now. Dave posted it for me. Thank you, Dave. And 8 of 9 on the road. Okay. This is we've talked about this since November.
If you don't make
this is the stretch.
If you don't at least tread, you have to tread water. If you don't tread water on this road trip,
seven or eight
home games in a row at the end of February don't matter.
You got to at least go 500 now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's treading water.
Yeah.
I mean, because you have to.
That's at least that's a minimum here.
Anything worse than that?
Boy, this division's bad.
Well, it's awful.
Beginning of the year when we did our preview and for the 20 millionth time. You guys didn't pick the Jets, and I did. And once again, I'll live and die by that. I'm still sticking with my pick, and you guys are as well. We're men of honor. When we were predicting...
That's like I carried away with this men of honor stuff.
When we were predicting the divisions, and we did our NHL season preview, which we've done for the last 3 years, we all pretty much agreed the Central was the strongest. Nobody said the Southeast was one of the stronger divisions. But wow, have these teams fallen. The Carolina Hurricanes... The Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning are all way below what we predicted. Perhaps the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Washington Capitals out of those three.
My predictions were brutal this year.
Well, I mean, Richie, I mean, predictions. I mean, a lot happens. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah. Nobody predicted Eric Staal falling like he has.
Nobody predicts St. Louis hiring Ken Hitchcock.
Exactly.
But predictions were so terrible.
And once again, Ken. I think it's safe to say now. Ken Hitchcock is one of the greatest coaches of all time. I mean, he's turned that team around and given them confidence. I mean, coach of the year easily.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
I give it to Paul McClain.
Oh, yeah, Paul McClain, good choice.
It's between the two of them, yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah, it's a two-horse race. And I think that, it's to the benefit of the Jets, and next year, the Jets are going to be back in the Southeast Division. But you're right, I mean... It's not a bad thing, and the Jets have been able to take advantage of it. They've beaten the Hurricanes 3 times this year. They've already beaten the Panthers once this year.
Yeah.
Beaten the Capitals. Beaten the Lightning. So, the Jets...
Absolutely.
They have a few injuries to key players, but right now... They are in a position that not a lot of people thought they were going to be in, and they are not going to miss the playoffs this year for lack of opportunity. Because right now,
it's a good point,
right now
it's
they
true.
Might be in a better That's opportunity true. To make the playoffs than any of the teams in this division, with the exception of Washington. But nobody expected to be fighting for the playoffs.
You're not Toronto, and you're not playing against, I know Buffalo's struggling, Montreal's struggling, but you're not playing against those teams, and then obviously Ottawa playing well, and then Boston. Like, you're not playing against anybody like Boston. You're not playing 6 times against a team like Boston. Nobody looks very good right now in this division, and you have the opportunity, and as he's exactly right, the opportunity is there. The stars have aligned quite well for the Jets this year.
Yeah, and there's nothing to apologize for. I mean...
Absolutely not.
It's the division you play
Absolutely
in.
Absolutely not.
The stars have aligned, and, I was thinking about this, and granted, when we made our predictions back in the summer, a lot of that was fueled by optimism. And I'll be honest. I mean, I was thinking if everything goes well, if Pavlik stands on his head, if Bogosian develops, if Kane develops, the Jets will make the playoffs.
By the way, that was
a lot of wishful thinking. I just want to say one thing, though, Richie.
Okay.
But you guys were right, though. I mean, there is a lack of talent on the top two lines. But when you consider that before Vander Kane went out with an injury, he hadn't scored a goal in 10 games. Dustin Byfuglien hasn't played in 10 games. And Chris Mason and Andre Pavlik have been splitting games, and they've had this crazy schedule with 7 road games here, 6 home games here. The Jets are within 3 points of the division lead. You're thinking, what is going on? And the only answer that you can really come up with is that the division is bad. That's the only thing that I can think of. When you have Kane not scoring, Byfuglien out, and a crazy schedule, but you're still a couple of games above 500, and you're 3 points out of a playoff spot, it has to be that the division just isn't that good. Right. Unless you guys come up with another idea. I can't think of any other one.
We've watched enough Southeast Division hockey. It's just not a good division. I mean, nobody thought Tampa Bay would drop off the way they are. But they have. And, I mean, it's just not a very good division.
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, it's nothing to... Just the way it boils down.
Yeah.
I want to clarify something. I terribly misspoke earlier when I was talking about the regulation wins for the Southeast Division.
Uh-oh.
I apologize. Washington has 24 regulation wins. Winnipeg has 21. Florida has 19.
Oh, Drew.
Regulation.
Oh, yeah, you know what, Drew?
I was reading some old stats or something.
You know what? I'll be honest. When you said 29, First off, they only have 21 wins.
Well, that's what I said.
So the fact that they only have 8 more regulation wins than total wins,
it's really weird,
is mathematically not possible.
Because Drew gave us a big talk last week after the show, but never questioning him.
Yeah.
I did not do that.
He's like, don't question my manhood. And so we're like, okay, Drew, we'll be nicer to you. And then you toss out 29 regulation wins.
I apologize. I misspoke.
And we always give you so much respect because you're a political speechwriter in Ottawa. You're personal friends with Ken Dryden, and we've always just
You text with Newt Gingrich.
With Newt Gingrich.
Sorry, that's Fig Newton.
Sorry, and Mitt Romney. I wonder, does Mitt Romney, by the way, have a brother named Glove?
Right. If you guys
go Romney, I'm Team Romney.
If you guys treat me with respect, I'd hate to see somebody that you don't treat.
That's all
respect.
Good, Drew. You know what? They're actually not that far behind the Capitals for most regulation wins, and the Jets haven't gone to overtime that much.
No, the Jets are when the Jets win, which is tends to not be that often.
They have more wins than losses.
Yeah, they do fine, but they've been clean wins, has to be a clean win.
Yep.
If you only get one, if you only gain 1 point on them, it's not good enough. This is a team. The Florida Panthers are. I mean,
what
they're vulnerable.
What will be more clean tonight? The Jets win?
Yeah.
Or Drew's plate in the press box?
There's never any food left on that plate.
You guys, this is what they mean by treating me with respect, right? Is this what it is? You guys want to break early, go to the news, come back and do NHL news and notes?
Yeah, and we torment each other some more.
Some Crosby news just came through the wire, too, so we'll talk about that after the break.
You're listening to Mr. Lube Game Day, TSN 1290, your home for Winnipeg Jets action. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1:16 or so in the afternoon here on Winnipeg Jets, Mr. Lube Game Day.
We're about to go on air. Remus is asking me for money for drinks. I mean,
yeah,
what
Remus,
am I, a bank
come
machine?
Come on, yeah. This is not a debit machine.
You got everyone a drink except for me.
But it was on Tim's dime, though.
So let's talk Remus quickly. Get in here for a second, Remus. This morning I tried to go for breakfast with Ezzy and Remus, and Ezzy said no. And then Ezzy was supposed to pick me up at 11 to go for a coffee to prepare for the show, and then Ezzy picked me up at 11:15. And asked me if he should pick me up before Remus, even though Remus lives the other way. Anyhow.
Because obviously I'm a car service.
And then he ended up taking a convoluted route to where we were going. But having said that, and then, you know, we were like, why wouldn't we go for breakfast? We always go for breakfast. And then Ezzy said he didn't want to go for breakfast. And then Remus.
Man, Ezzy, after the game on Thursday, you're like, man, we should be going for breakfast more before the show. Like, it builds a, you know, team unity, something like that.
The reason why I didn't want to go for breakfast today, you asked me at 9 in the morning. I was up at 9. I wanted to prep for the show. I mean, there was a lot to prep. Drew sends out a nice show plan.
You can't prep over a nice meal?
It's tough to, I mean, when you're digging into an omelet, where are you going to put your laptop? I don't have an iPad. I wanted to prep for the show. That's a good thing. That's a sign that I'm a professional.
We weren't talking at 9 a.m. It was me asking if he wanted to go for breakfast, and him responding to me saying, hi.
Yeah, assume so.
Thank you for that segment, Michael, of throwing me under the bus.
What's the Sidney Crosby news that you said?
Well, Sidney Crosby is now headed to, I believe, California. Just came through on TSN.
San Jose or L.A.?
And he's going to see...
Who's coming back the other way?
Hasn't been traded.
Oh, right.
He's going to see a spine specialist now.
Okay.
So that just came through. So,
well, I believe
undergoing a series of tests with a neurological spine specialist, the team announced on Saturday. The guy's name is Dr. Robert Bray. We've heard that name before.
Yeah, I've seen him before.
And so it's maybe we haven't. But in any event, it's another step, hopefully, towards his return. But I don't think it's anybody he's seen before.
No, that's why it's interesting. Because earlier in the week, he went to Atlanta to meet with Dr. Ted Carrick. And Dr. Ted Carrick was featured on Hockey Night in Canada
with Friedman.
With Elliot Friedman showing the revolutionary work that he does in regards to concussions. And it was, I think, after first visiting Dr. Carrick that Crosby started feeling better after the first concussion.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact, I don't know what it means that he's going to another expert afterwards. But
I mean, I don't know if it's a sign towards his progression or a worrisome sign. In any event, I mean, clearly he's not close to coming back, and for the game and for his own personal life, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Right, and Drew has kind of been...
If you were his agent or you were his parents,
mm-hmm.
and I know we've discussed this,
Drew, I'm going to cut in right there, because if he still has the symptoms, I mean, you have to question whether or not this is going to be something that he should continue to play.
I mean, it really boils down to that simple. I mean, should he still be playing hockey?
And because he's Sidney Crosby, Ezzy, and not Mark Savard, you know, people seem to be more okay with telling Savard, you shouldn't come back because look what's happened. Sidney Crosby, people want to see him play and he's younger. They're not going to say that. And don't get me wrong, he could take 3 years off and then eventually come back, or he could come back this year, whatever it may be. But people, you know, it's actually funny because, not funny, but you see on TSN here, there's a part on the side about, you know, tough to see a bright future for Mark Savard, speaking about his post-concussion syndrome. If that's the case, and if that's the worst-case scenario, do you want to subject yourself to that? And not to, you know, he's 24 years old, and they're still obviously...
Yeah, so young. It's unreal that Crosby's still 24.
Yeah, and then to have the conversation. But, I mean, at some point, Drew mentioned it. I mean, what do you want to risk in terms of your lifestyle?
Right, and we're hearing that Chris Pronger is having a... Not only is Chris Pronger having difficulty... you know, with the fact that he can't play for the Flyers. He's having trouble with basic eating breakfast, stuff like that. Drew, you've been, you know, for everyone who's listened to Illegal Curve, you've been saying this for months and months, maybe even years, that, about concussions, that it's brain damage. Anybody who's listened to it, and it is. And when you're talking about brain damage, you're talking about a human being's susceptibility to things that you would not be susceptible earlier. And, Sidney Crosby... when he was injured, when he ran into, I believe it was Chris Kunitz, when he ran into Chris Kunitz this last time in early December and went down, he might not have been affected by that at all before he had his first or second concussion. You're talking about your entire body here. It's your central nervous system. When you're talking about guys that are having CTE and these long-term problems, you're talking about guys not being able to possibly shovel their snow without getting a headache or sitting down. I mean, you heard Sidney Crosby towards the end of last year and early this year talking about how he had difficulty with bright lights and watching TV or video games and stuff like that. So when you hear Sidney Crosby's going to California to talk about a spinal specialist, that's because there are so many different things involved here with brain injuries. I mean, it's not as easy as doing this concussion litmus test where follow my finger, say 10 back. Backwards. I mean, there's a lot more involved here, and that's why he wants to know, okay, what else is affected here? I mean, like, Crosby how bad is it? How bad is this, 24/7, this injury?
24/7 gave us an interesting perspective into that with the whole Giroux. Yep. You know, Kupanga really wasn't part of the part of, I haven't seen the fourth episode.
He was only interviewed, I think, in the first episode, right?
Right, and that was before, I think, the concussion was diagnosed. Or, no, just was. But when you see Claude Giroux in the ice, and he's playing, and he's a little bit hesitant to return to the ice, and Laviolette comes up, he goes, "You kidding me? You look great." And maybe that, we don't see everything that goes on, but that, to me, that seemed like a little bit of pressure.
Yep.
Get back in the lineup, and you know, maybe not try not to coddle him, but you know, and I think it was in Elliot Friedman's 30 Thoughts this week, Drew. I mean, I think you usually read that, right?
Yeah,
I think he spoke about the one team apparently has a player that they think is ready to come back from a concussion, and he won't play, and they think it's all in his head. Well, it's like, you know what? When it's your lifestyle, not just for this year, but for the rest of your life at stake, give the guy as much time as he needs.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to. Give the guy as much time as he needs.
Yeah.
Okay, this is we have to talk about this now because Evander Kane has just responded to it on Twitter.
Oh boy.
It's
a mess on there right now.
Yeah, Evander Kane needs to get off Twitter.
Yeah, I think we'd agree on that.
Well, we kind of had that argument, like, really, no athlete should be on Twitter.
That was about a month ago.
Yeah, he needs to get off Twitter. There is you can find it on your own. You don't need me to find it.
How many followers does Kane have? 100,000?
65,000.
Right, so there's 65,000 people that have a chance to beak at him.
And they're beaking at him, and he's now responded to it. There's a poster going around that's accusing him of some nefarious activities. And he's responded and said it's a complete lie. And, you know, frankly, we don't know one way or the other.
We're not going to speculate.
Well, he shouldn't be on Twitter.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I mean,
the team needs to
have him off Twitter at this point in time.
He's not going to play tonight, and he should focus on getting back into the lineup. He shouldn't. And the thing is also, I mean, let's be honest here. You know, when there are people out there that can sit in their sweatpants and by their computer and say whatever they want and not have any repercussions, then you're going to get responses out of guys because
they
feel like they're being attacked.
That's the internet. There's no reason for him to be on Twitter.
Subjecting himself to it, and he's opening up, and we don't know what's going on with anything. But in terms of just the overall having to deal with that, and has he commented recently, Drew?
He just commented a second ago.
What did he say?
He retweeted. I mean, he took the link to the picture that's going around. There's a sign at a game in Ottawa earlier this week.
Okay. Yeah.
He says that it's a complete lie.
Okay.
And earlier in the day, he tweeted music lyrics about sort of ignoring all the haters.
Yes, yeah. He needs to get off
Twitter.
You know what was a good idea? The Free Press giving Evander Kane his own blog. That was a good idea. Let him have. He should be writing about his life on a blog.
Frankly, Twitter's
useless.
I don't really want to hear about it. I don't.
Well, I'm just saying, if it's blog versus Twitter.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Let him have a blog. Get him off Twitter.
If you have an editor.
If the Free Press wants to give him a column, that's their business, and I don't really care one way or the other about that. But he needs to be off Twitter because it is allowing for. I don't want to say it's chaos because it's words. So I mean, it's words on a screen. But there's no benefit right now to his being on Twitter.
Well, the concern
at the moment.
There, Drew, isn't it? If that's something like that, you know, you don't want people, you know, people yelling on computers. One thing you want him not. Yeah, privy to that kind of thing because they can. You don't want it.
You don't want to poison the atmosphere.
Yeah, right. We've talked about this before. Some teams have a social media policy, and we'll have to maybe talk to Scott Brown about it. But I don't know if the Jets have one.
I'm sure they do, but I'm sure that there's also situations where they might step in and say, yeah. Okay.
And you know what? To be honest with you, there's a few issues here, and we won't get into it too much, but unless Drew wants to. But I mean, on Twitter, you have people that want attention. So they want to see their own name. They want to see their name tweeted at Kane and stuff like that. And they want to get followers themselves. They want to make a name for themselves in this kind of social media subculture. And mm-hmm. the fact is that it creates an unsafe environment with the players. I mean, you don't want players. You know, being attacked and accused of things on Twitter.
No,
and just don't.
And there's no accountability. I mean, it's
computer toughness, right? It's tough.
Yeah, behind the screen, everybody's
exactly.
very tough.
And if you won't say it, you know, the saying, and when you know in schools these days, if you wouldn't say it to somebody, to young kids, you know, the Facebook bullying things like that. If you wouldn't say it to their face, why are you writing it on a computer? And
this is bullying. I mean, to some extent, it is bullying because there's no. I mean, if it's true, then let it play out in the way it should, not behind a computer screen. I mean, it doesn't just
in any event.
Anybody can be bullied.
In any event,
kid.
if you're trying to, you know, if you're the Jets, let's put it from that perspective. Okay,
get them off Facebook.
Well, because if you
get
want your player to be the most productive and always focusing on being better and a relaxed mind, all that stuff, then you can't have him engaging.
No, this is, I mean, the team.
But also, the player needs to realize that with the 65,000 followers and the attention that he is seeking, because you really are seeking attention, tweeting about what you're doing every day, because nobody should actually give a care about that.
Right.
If you're doing that, there also is going to be some negative. I mean, we get negative tweets.
Yep. Haters.
And we're not Evander Kane.
No. Well, I don't. Mine are all positive.
You're
just
all positive,
like, you're the best. I love you. Yeah. Can we get more of you on the radio? When are you going to get a TV show? Wow, you're really cool. I'd like to take you out for dinner. But I know that illegal curves sometimes get hate, but not me personally.
No.
That's very true. But at this point in time, the team needs to step in, I think, and get him off Twitter.
But I think that, yeah.
But, you know, let's, yeah.
We have Ed coming up here?
We have Ed Tate coming up on the other side.
You can ask him.
Yeah, we'll talk to Ed about that. We'll talk about the Jets with Ed, all sorts of things. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Mr. Lube Game Day, live on TSN 1290.